It's episode 123 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, Hacksaw Ridge, and Loving. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast@gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look us up on YouTube and iTunes and subscribe. Or head on over to Facebook, search for the Hodgepodge Podcast, and like our page.
And I don't think it's really loving, it's more loving.
I love my wife. Love. All right. Yeah, so we were away, I guess, for the Thanksgiving holiday-ish stuff thing, and we saw a bunch of movies. So we're actually recording two episodes today. So...
double your pleasure.
There will be a lack of movie news
on the next, your fun.
On the next episode. Because all the movie news is right now.
Rogue One tickets on sale.
Yes, Rogue One tickets are on sale. So buy them if you can.
Got ours. Get yours.
Yeah, we got ours.
It's not selling out. But
it is.
No. South Point has all kinds of seats open.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. It's
because they said it shut down Fandango. I just saw the story. It says they shut down Fandango.
Maybe, but it's not like it's selling out at every single theater around here.
Oh, well, no. Even The Force Awakens didn't do that. They had to add more screenings, but even, I mean...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, that you don't have to rush out. You're gonna be able to get tickets.
Maybe not opening night, but...
Maybe not Thursday night, but yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so we got our tickets, so we're ready to go for the new Star Wars movie. And I was thinking about it yesterday. I'm actually kind of pissed that they're not doing any crawl or anything for it. I mean, just don't call it episode whatever, and that's how you tell the difference between the episodes and the non-episodes. And are they going to put that fake? Are they going to put that fake pastiche Star Wars music before it?
Probably.
Ugh, God.
Probably.
Like they did in Clone Wars. It's like diddle diddle diddle. You're just like, ugh.
Likely, yeah. Yeah. Especially that they want to adventurize it.
I guess whatever. Fuck them. It's like just fucking do John Williams Star Wars. Blah. Short little crawl.
Yeah.
And just call it Rogue One. Don't call it anything else.
I get that they want to differentiate it, but
right.
But who the fuck are you kidding? It's a Star Wars movie.
Yeah,
you there's no reason not to do a crawl.
Yeah,
but I'm not upset about it like you are because I don't.
I'm not upset about it.
You just said
I got killed.
You just
people.
Said you're more upset about it now. I'm just saying I'm not like it's not an issue for me, but there's I don't see a reason not to. But
right.
whatever.
Also, I guess that's the big news. And the box office Moana. Which we'll be discussing on the next episode, won the box office.
Yep.
And so Disney continues their domination of everything. And Westworld was on last night, the penultimate episode for the season. You watched it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, it's getting real now.
I don't think I'm quite as engrossed as you and Matt are.
Right.
I really like the show, but I'm not. Like, I didn't. That was pretty paint by numbers what happened. I didn't.
Oh, really?
We've talked about that happening for like five episodes now.
Well, no, that's true. But the other thing is, but when, you know, it's still when it happens, you're just like, ooh. And like, you know,
yeah.
There's other stuff that happened that was kind of surprising that I liked. But yeah, it's a doozy. And the next episode is the final episode for the season. And that is going to end up being 90 minutes. So that's next Sunday. Okay, so let's get into it. I guess we'll talk about Fantastic Beasts first.
Okay.
This is the...
mediocre beast it is.
This is the continuation of the Harry Potter world.
Yeah.
But it's not a Harry Potter story. This takes place...
It's in the same universe.
Same universe, but it takes place about like 70 years in the past.
Right.
And so it's set in the 20s.
Yeah.
Because the Harry Potter movies...
That's true. It started in the... You're right.
They're in the 90s,
you're right.
Technically.
Yeah.
So, the Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is about Newt Scamander, who is played by Eddie Redmayne. And he is a cryptozoologist who is scouring the world for all the kinds of magical beasts and creatures, and he wants to protect them. He has his case where he keeps all the beasts, of course, because it's magic. It's like a, you know, it's like almost like a house or whatever in his case, and he keeps all the creatures in there like a almost like a magical creature preserve almost.
And then he develops a neurological disease and gets trapped in his own body.
No.
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 Oh.
No.
I was watching a different movie.
And he's British, and he goes to New York. Fans of J.K. Rowling's universe get to see, and Dirty A shaking his head because he doesn't care about any of this shit.
Okay.
They finally get to see what magic is like in America.
Oh, long awaited.
And shut up. Will you shut up? You can do the talk on loving. So, you know, you meet a whole host of characters. There's Tina, who is an auror in the United States. She's played by Catherine Waterston, who was in Inherent Vice. She's also going to be in Alien Covenant, which comes out next year.
May. Yep.
Yeah, they moved it up. Then you've got her sister, Queenie, who is played by Allison... Can't remember her last name.
She represents the progressiveness...
Yes.
Of the magic world, if you will.
Yes, because Allison Sudol plays Queenie. Because in this world, like in the Harry Potter movies, Muggles, or as they're called in America, Nomadges. I like Muggle better.
Or human. Why the fuck they need a different name for that?
Well, they're all humans. They're all humans. I mean, it's not like X-Men where it's like it's mutants and whatever. So, the Muggles, basically, and the wizards and witches are not allowed to, like, even, like, commingle. Like, that's how secret they want to keep it. Whereas in the Harry Potter world, you know, in that time frame, you know, there's kids who have magical powers who were born to just Muggle parents, right. like Hermione. So it's everything's cool then.
Yeah, this is more like this is like pre-civil rights.
Yeah, pretty much. Colin Farrell plays Graves, who is an auror who works with
Graves, huh?
Yeah, they call it it's called MACUSA. It's the Magical American Congress or something like that.
It's basically a police force,
right?
That enforces the magic ground.
It's like the Ministry of Magic in England, if for Harry Potter fans. And then you also meet a Muggle. Or Nomad, named Jacob Kowalski, and he's played by Dan Fogler, and he gets drawn into Newt's adventures. Yeah. Basically,
I mean, in my book, he makes the movie.
He's the best character in the whole thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Most people, if you're listening to this, you probably have already seen it. But basically, this is setting up five freaking movies, four other movies.
Just when you think it's over.
Four other movies, and
I'm sure if you're a Harry Potter fan, most of you probably loved it. My guess is just the nostalgia of it coming back. You probably loved.
Yes and no. I mean, you know, I liked it. I loved Jacob. I loved Kowalski, and I loved Queenie. They were great. I loved their characters. They were fantastic. Tina, she's the straight man, so they didn't really give her much to work.
I didn't like her much at all, but yeah, exactly. They didn't give her much to do. So
I liked Eddie Redmayne.
She's basically running around saying stuff to move the plot along.
Yeah. I liked Eddie Redmayne as Newt. The problem is that they made him very socially awkward, which is fine. But when you're mumbling your lines, I can't understand what you're saying. And you have the accent. It's like, you need subtitles at some point.
It didn't bother me, but I probably wasn't paying that much attention to begin with, so...
You had other things on your mind.
Yeah.
But Colin Farrell, he's decent in this, but the problem with him, I think, is that there is much more to his role than you see, and I think he was kind of, like, caught in the middle of, like, how do I act, you know, cause you know, there's a big twist with him at the end of the movie. Also Ezra Miller's in this. He plays, a kid who wants to be part of the wizarding world, but he doesn't have any powers. So we think, and, his adopted mother is played by Samantha Morton. She is like a staunch anti wizard and witch person. Cause she believes that they exist.
So she is a, what do you call, Muggle.
Yeah.
But she somehow knows that they exist.
And she believes they exist.
She's fighting against them.
Right, right.
She's akin to the KKK.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there were lots of parallels here with the whole
civil
rights thing. And and she would have been akin to leading the KKK, basically.
Yeah.
Now that said, these fucking things are destroying a lot of shit.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. Basically, Carmen Yujogo, who played Coretta Scott King in Selma, she plays basically the president of the Magic Society in America. No, yeah, that was one of the issues I had with the movie, because there's so much crap going on, and they're trying to keep it so secret that they have to do what they call obliviate all these muggles so they don't remember magic. But it's not like Men in Black, where they have the device and they say, you know, this is hours, days, years.
Call it the screenwriters, whomever, they didn't apply any rules to this spell that they cast.
Right.
So it's like, do you lose a year of time? Do you lose 5 minutes of time? Like,
do you forget who you are?
How do you not know? And, you know,
there was a huge plot hole. And especially since how important it figures into the end of the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
J.K. Rowling, who wrote the Harry Potter novels, she wrote the screenplay. This is her first screenplay, and it showed. I think it would have been better if they had paired her with Steve Kloves, who wrote the majority of the screenplays for the Harry Potter movies. Just because he's a more seasoned writer, he could have helped like hone the story a little more. Because there's a lot of stuff that goes on in this movie that you're just like, why is this in this movie? Like the whole John Voight thing. Like, I didn't even mention John Voight. John Voight's in this as a newspaper guy.
That in the middle of the movie, you think that's going to be like the crux of a twist or something like that.
Right.
Or at least not a twist, but a crux of a turn of the plot.
Right.
And yeah, it just happens, and then that's it. He serves to be, at some point, a grieving guy.
They say that he's going to play a role in the later movies.
That's a lot of the issues that this movie brings to light is what any movie like this, where you're introducing a bunch of characters but setting them up for future use, essentially.
She didn't follow her own rules that she did for the Harry Potter books, where like the first book is very self-contained, and then, you know, if there's going to be
branch out from there. But this was clearly written with the intention of making piggybacking over it. So it's a lot of character development. It's not even that good.
No, there's a real dearth.
But that's the idea of this,
right? It's world building is really more. There's more world building in this than there is character development.
And then they show like several times from the very beginning of the movie to the very end of the movie, this one beast. I mean, this one animal.
Oh yeah, imagine the hornet.
Like, you keep expecting it to be like, because he kept running into it. And you're like, why aren't you trying to catch that thing that's clearly just out and about? And nothing ever comes of that.
Right.
I don't know. That annoyed me. It's a minor part, but it just annoyed me.
What happens is that Newt's, some of his creatures get out, and then he has to help the Makusa basically get it back.
But you find out that he's gone to America to actually return one to America. He had rescued a captured giant eagle-like bird.
Called a thunderbird.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Whatever. It's a giant bird.
What's they call it? Fuck you. wouldn't say that if I said it's called a rancor and it's Star Wars. You would have said, okay, whatever.
It's a big toothy monster. It's a giant bird.
Looks like a potato.
And yeah, he's rescued it from captivity, and it's an endangered bird, and he's going to set it free where its home is, so it can kind of, you know, breed and be happy and all that good stuff.
Right.
So that's why you find out later, that's why he's come to America.
And, so that's basically it. We don't have to really reveal any more of the plot. It's my one sentence review of it was good, not great.
I didn't hate it by any means. I did
see it twice, but I really went to go see it a second time solely for Queenie and Kowalski, because I thought they were great.
Right.
I loved them.
I mean, clearly you're going to enjoy it even more than I did, because
I'm a fan. Yeah, I'm a fan of.
But even I didn't hate it. It wasn't terrible.
It wasn't as bad as something as say like Miss Peregrine's.
Home for Children. Sure. That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So. Definitely check it out. There's going to be another one. So it's like, if you haven't seen it, don't worry. There's going to be another one. It won the box office clearly the weekend it came out, and then it's still hanging in there.
Yeah, it's still tough, but I mean, we can't. You're not going to beat Moana.
No, yeah, Disney is a juggernaut that can't be defeated, and I'm sure someday they will own Harry Potter as well. I mean, pretty much, right?
Probably.
All right, so that's Fantastic Beasts. Let's talk about a movie that I mentioned on our last episode, but you hadn't seen yet, and you just saw it recently. And I thought it was really, really good. I really enjoyed this. This is Mel Gibson's Hacksaw Ridge. What'd you think?
It's a very good movie. Gibson does a good job with pacing it,
and the action,
and throwing the action in, you know, right in the middle. You get, it's essentially, you know, slightly over 2 hours. You get you get roughly 30 to 45 minutes, probably closer to 45 minutes, kind of setting up the character development leading into battle.
Right.
And then you get a solid hour's worth of battle.
Right.
Which is kind of the crux of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your little 15 minutes kind of epilogue after
the fact.
Yeah. So but it's paced really well, and this is kind of Gibson doing what he does best as a filmmaker.
Right, yeah.
It is very true to life in terms of war. So
yes.
It's gory. Don't go into it thinking...
It's like Saving Private Ryan.
It's not painted over. It's not brushed over. It's very gory.
But that's been kind of the case since Saving Private Ryan.
For sure.
Since Spielberg
set the new bar for war movies and showing
especially
the realism
yeah.
For that. That's still kind of the pinnacle of war movies.
Yeah.
But this is not terribly far behind it.
This is really excellent.
And it's a true story to boot.
Yeah, that's the thing. Saving Private Ryan wasn't a true story.
Right.
It was based on the Lincoln letter from the Civil War.
Correct.
But this is absolutely a true story. It tells the story of Desmond Doss, who's played by Andrew Garfield, and he was the first conscientious objector to ever receive the Medal of Honor. And
conscientious objector being someone, a pacifist essentially,
right? He's a pacifist
who joins the war effort but will not brandish a weapon,
right? And most times conscientious objectors
they'll have a way, they just won't use it, they won't kill anybody.
Well, no, it's not just that. It's conscientious objectors mainly is a term that was used for I guess it became more popular, I guess, in Vietnam. When people were, you know, trying to get out of the draft, and they're just like, "I'm a conscientious objector."
Oh,
I'm
not gonna, you're forcing me to do this, but I'll enlisting as an objector, but kind of thing. Okay.
Well, no, they weren't even enlisting. That's how they were saying, "No, I'm not gonna fill out the draft card. I'm a conscientious objector."
Well, I think it was different. That may have spawned off into something else later. Yeah,
but no, he very much wants to serve in the war.
He's not drafted. He enlists.
Right. Yeah, he enlists.
He wants to do this,
but he wants to become a medic. That is in part because he falls in love with a nurse who's played by Teresa Palmer. And that's part of it. I mean, he had an interest in it, but that spurs it even more.
Yes.
And he is very religious. That's where this pacifism comes from. He's very religious because of a childhood. I wouldn't even say a childhood tragedy. It was a childhood. It was a very
almost tragedy. Yeah.
And so it really scared him straight. We'll say
correct. That's exactly what it did. He essentially. As kind of a preteen, got into a fight with his brother.
Yes,
and almost killed him.
Almost killed him. Yeah,
and then he kind of turns to God. You see him in the movie. You see him reflecting over a picture that says, "You know, thou shalt not kill." And
right.
He's like, "Oh shit! I almost killed my brother."
Yeah.
And then from then on out.
Yeah, he's very religious.
Yeah. But the whole family dynamic of this movie was. Excellent.
Yeah,
the first 45 minutes,
very interesting.
It really allowed you to understand who he was,
right,
and to care about him going forward.
Right. His father was played by Hugo Weaving,
who was
fantastic.
He was really good.
He steals pretty much every scene
he does.
In
he's so good.
His mother's played by Rachel Griffiths. I'm guessing that she doesn't meet anybody in the cutscenes on a plane and then fucks them in the janitor's closet. It's like Six Feet Under reference for everybody who liked Six Feet Under. And they're very good in this, but Hugo Weaving was fantastic. Oh, he is a... He plays a...
He had his,
he's
had
a drunk,
his,
but...
His real face and everything.
Yes, exactly. For once, yes. Yeah, he's not wearing an anonymous a Guy Fawkes mask, or he's not wearing the Red Skull. Right. You know, he's not wearing sunglasses all the time. Right. He plays a World War I veteran who is suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Which, doesn't exist back then. They don't.
Right, that's not what they call it. But
100%,
yeah.
Like, he's hardcore.
Yeah. And so he's like an alcoholic, and he abuses his wife, and gets into a lot of fights with her. I don't know if he abused her physically a lot.
It was referenced that he did.
Yeah, okay. So but he beats the kids too and stuff like that. So he's a real son of a bitch. But it's also like they don't excuse it, but they're kind of like, we know why.
It's not an excuse. It's simply it showed. I mean, not that it's not like this if you do get treatment, but it shows the effects of PTSD with no treatment. I mean, it's brutal. It's as worse on him as it is on anyone he's mistreating.
Yeah. He basically wanted to die.
Yes.
Yeah.
He knows he's an asshole. He knows that what he's doing, he just can't stop.
So basically what happens is Desmond goes to basic, and in the beginning he does real well. And what?
Before we go here, I'm just curious. Did I just miss something, or did they not say what the fuck happened to his brother?
No, his brother. I don't think they did. His brother enlisted and just went to go fight
in
the war.
His brother went first, and then I don't know if it was weeks or months later he enlisted.
I think he lived.
But did they ever? They never even mentioned it. I thought that was a little odd.
Did they have the real brother? Like his real brother at the end? Like in real life?
Oh, I don't know.
When they had like, you know, the people talking.
Yeah,
like,
I don't know.
I could have sworn they talked to his real brother.
Maybe that's the capper that I missed on what happened to his brother. Because they did not reference it, and I kept wondering.
Yeah.
Like, did he die? What happened to him? I mean, I know that's not what the story was about, but you could have fit it in there.
Yeah, yeah. So Desmond goes to basic, and when he gets there, he starts off doing a really good job. He does good with the running and all the PT stuff and all that stuff, you know, but then as soon as they say, hey, you gotta shoot the rifle, he's like, yeah, I'm not gonna touch it. I my religion says I can't touch a gun, basically. So they, his sergeant, who's played by Vince Vaughn.
Maybe the only downside of the movie. I thought he was fine, but I couldn't get over it being Vince Vaughn.
That is part of the problem I have with it because it's not so much him.
It's not his fault, but he's so pigeonholed.
Right.
It's just hard for me to see him in this super.
Right. But it's not just him. It's also the way they depicted his whole
regiment.
His whole unit. It was very much a quote unquote movie regiment, like a movie unit.
You had all the facets.
You had the Italian guy, the Texas guy, exactly. They had all the stereotypes in there.
That's true.
And it almost felt like it shifted almost to like a comedy when he was in there.
Not that
it didn't work in the movie, it just felt a little off.
They did try to throw that very subtle comedy elements in there. It's not like necessarily laugh out loud, but it is like you snickered a couple times.
But Vince Vaughn plays the drill sergeant, and who actually goes with them to the war, which was interesting. That was interesting.
My guess is it was a lot more common back then, just given the sheer war, because they need people.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You're probably right. Sam Worthington plays his captain, and this was actually the first time I saw Sam Worthington in a part, and I didn't absolutely fucking hate him.
No, he was good.
he was pretty good.
He was fine, yeah.
The main guy...
Because he played subtle. He didn't try to steal anything away. He just played a character.
The main guy in his unit is played by Luke Bracey. He's Smitty. His character's name is Smitty. And he's basically the guy who antagonizes Desmond the most, but then once they get into the battlefield and he sees what Desmond does there... He turns it around.
He's got the biggest cathartic
arc. They basically become almost like friends on the battlefield. And basically what happens is that, I mean, we're not really giving anything away because it's in the trailer, basically. They sell it. Desmond basically puts his life at risk and saves
70 plus soldiers Single-handedly.
And it's an incredible story. And basically, I was watching a thing on Collider where they were talking to Vaughn and they were talking to Bracey. And Luke Bracey was like, we actually had to tone down the truth in this movie, because if we had told the actual truth, like, you know, how it really was, nobody would believe it. He's like, we actually had to tone it down to make it believable.
Yeah.
Because what happened was just so amazing.
So essentially, like, you know, they go to break the...
They're fighting in Japan.
Yeah, they're fighting in Japan, and essentially his unit, not just his unit, but...
Yeah,
I don't know what you call. I'm sorry, my army speak is just not.
They're trying to take. They're trying to take a ridge.
They're trying to take this Japanese stronghold,
right?
And they get pushed back,
right?
So they almost think they have it,
right?
But then Japanese forces basically have tunneled underground, right. and they all come up, so they have to fall back,
right?
And so they fall back below the ridge again, back to the beach, but Desmond stays up. Essentially by himself, go around hunting for people that are still alive,
yeah,
so that he
wounded,
can save them.
So he can save them.
And so he's basically alone on this battlefield where the Japanese are...
hunting for him.
Hunting for anybody
who's alive.
Well, anybody who's alive, but then towards the end, specifically him, because they actually see him.
Right, yeah.
And Desmond is single-handedly, one by one, pulling back soldiers... and lowering down the ridge to save their lives.
It was like a pulley, system he creates
on the fly. A self-created pulley system.
It's incredible.
It's amazing. Like I thought, okay, this guy's going to get like 10 people.
Right.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
And no, it was like 75 people.
Yeah.
It's like, holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, grown men.
Not even all of them were Americans.
Right. He saved some Japanese. Yeah.
Now they go to mention, I think, that they don't last long.
No, they don't.
They don't. But he does. He anyone he finds alive, he lowers them down.
Yeah.
Without a gun in his hand.
Grown men will weep when you see this movie. It's very touching. It's very emotional. And even the love story wasn't too saccharine either.
It didn't bog anything down. Like I said, it was paced very well. And honestly, the story between him and his father was just as compelling towards the beginning.
Yeah.
Because the whole deal was his father, because of what the war did to him, he did not want his sons going to war. And he essentially, when his first son told him, he was just like, basically, I mean, it's not like he disowned you, but he's just like, get out of my sight.
Yeah.
See you in hell. and then when Desmond told him, you know, he essentially, you know, tried to explain to him, don't you see what this has done to me?
Yeah.
Do you really want this for yourself?
Yeah.
But then he comes to actually go help him later. Don't want to ruin that.
Yeah.
It was, like I said, I thought his performance was the best.
Yeah. Hugo Weaving was great.
Yes.
And Andrew Garfield was great. Andrew Garfield, he really is...
The way he used his webs to pull back the soldiers.
He really is...
like a superhero.
Garfield really, he really is a talented actor. And it's a shame that they didn't give him the Spider-Man movies that basically he deserved.
Right. We've gone on record before that those movies were not his fault.
No,
he
was not his fault. Spider-Man. He was great, and those movies are fucking terrible. Speaking of Spider-Man, according to Matt, told me that we're going to get the trailer for Homecoming.
Is that right?
Rogue One,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So Hacksaw Ridge, definitely check it out.
It's still
in theaters.
I don't have my rankings, but it's easily within the top 10, probably top 5 of the year.
Yeah.
Easily.
And Mel Gibson. We haven't really talked about Mel Gibson. You know, I mean...
The asshole that is Mel Gibson.
Yeah, I mean, you really... This is a case where you really have to separate the artist and the art, because there's no denying that Mel Gibson is an asshole, you know.
His personal beliefs.
And what he said and all that stuff, but at the same time...
He can make a movie.
He's a hell of a filmmaker.
And yes, this movie does have religious undertones.
But Desmond never pushes it on people.
No. They're all his beliefs, right. and they can honestly, they can all be attributed to just morals as opposed to religion.
Yeah.
And Mel Gibson doesn't shove it. It's not like Passion of the Christ. He's not shoving some religion down your throat in this movie.
Yeah.
It is just a very good true story of a war movie.
Yeah, it was really good. It was excellent. We need more films from Mel Gibson. Because
I bet that was hard to say.
Not really. I like Mel Gibson. I mean, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like I said, you have to kind of like separate it, you know.
I mean, I like him as a filmmaker, but I'm not gonna, there's still times where you can't push for people making movies if they're that big a anti-Semite or something
right.
like that.
No, that's
I mean,
true.
I mean, they shouldn't. You shouldn't be allowed to prosper that much.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
True.
I mean, yeah, you may be. Hitler was a great leader. I mean, you should push him to lead things.
I know, but
I used a Hitler reference against someone else. Yes, I did.
A guy who gets drunk and says a bunch of shit that he should vile
well,
and he shouldn't say.
Well,
compared to a guy who killed millions
of
people.
But he didn't get drunk once and say this stuff.
No, that's true.
He clearly he believes this stuff that he says. But anyway, but no, he is a great filmmaker and he was a decent actor too. So
yeah, he was pretty good in Blood Father.
Well, I didn't see it. I don't.
Yeah, it's not that great a movie. But he was very good.
All right.
At it. So now let's move on to a movie we saw just the other day, which surprised us because we didn't think it was going to be playing around here, and we got.
That's not the only reason it surprised me. Actually, the way it played out kind of surprised me too.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Then.
We'll talk about that.
And let's talk about that.
All right.
And we're talking about Jeff Nichols' latest film, Loving. This is the second film that Nichols has done this year. The other one was Midnight Special. Which I really liked.
Yeah, it's a very, very good movie.
And Loving is really good too. It's about the court case in the '60s, I guess.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I mean, that's
say
where
it's more about the relationship that led to the court case.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
It did
that's
not
true.
Delve much into the legality of the actual court case.
That's true. That's
yeah.
true. But to give people a reference point,
yeah.
you know, it's about Richard and Mildred Loving, who were an interracial couple in the 50s, and they got married in Virginia. Well, they got married in D.C.,
yes.
but they lived in Virginia. And surprise, surprise, in the 50s, in Virginia, it was illegal for blacks and whites to cohabitate and be married and have in you know mixed race kids.
Yeah, so they were someone
and,
someone basically called them out.
Yeah,
the authorities raided their home.
Yeah,
not their home, but they were staying with her father,
right.
and his family, and they raided the house, arrested both of them,
right,
and then essentially exiled them from the state.
Yeah, they exiled.
Said, if you want to be married, you can't do it.
You can't live here, and So basically what happens is that the film, it's like Dirty A said, it is about their relationship and how, I guess it takes place over about 10 years,
About a span of a decade.
And it shows how their relationship develops and deepens.
The strain that's put on it because they're away from their family. Particularly her.
Yeah. Because these are very much country folk,
yeah.
and they're forced to move to the city.
She hates it more than life.
Yeah,
it doesn't really deal with his adjustment very well, and that's likely because, probably because
he was so tight-lipped.
Yeah, so he probably in any interviews there wasn't much to gather from him.
Right. Basically, what happens is that she writes a letter on a suggestion of a friend. She writes a letter to Bobby Kennedy. And explains their situation, and basically Bobby Kennedy took the letter and sent it to the ACLU
to do something about this.
And so they get
they get the greenest attorney possible. I'm not even sure how the ACLU worked those days, but it seemed like he was like and this by the way was played by I don't remember the character's name, but it was Nick Kroll. Plays
Bernie Cohen. Bernie Cohen.
So he plays the attorney that they get who doesn't know a thing about civil law. Like
right.
I'm not sure how the ACLU worked those days because
he seemed to
be like an independent attorney.
Right, but he was in Virginia. So what they did is like I guess maybe they were members of the ACLU, and then when something like this comes up, they go to them and they say, "Hey, we need you."
Yeah,
to,
we don't really know.
Right.
My speculation was that Bobby Kennedy said, "Do something about this," and they're like, "Ah, oh, just throw someone at it. We got other things going on. He wants us to deal with this, so we're just going to throw someone at it."
It's possible.
Yeah.
And so he is later paired with another lawyer, Phil Hirschkopf, played by John Bass, and he is an actual civil rights attorney.
Yeah, and he's somehow playing like second chair.
Bernie Cohen doesn't know anything about anything.
He's just like shaking his head all the time, like this guy doesn't know what he's doing.
But and basically they take the case all the way to the Supreme Court. Jeff Nichols. Staple, Michael Shannon, has a very bit part in this. He plays a Life magazine photographer who was sent to cover the story. And basically, it shows the difference between Mildred and Richard in that, like we said, Richard was very tight-lipped. Mildred was more
hard on her sleeve kind of person.
Yeah, more sociable. And she was really the driving force behind this. Because what he wanted, he didn't want to create a whole big fuss.
He just wanted them to live together.
Yeah, he just wanted their situation resolved.
He only cared about them. He didn't care about the bigger world, the scope of the picture. Right. And that's where the movie was different than what I thought.
Right.
I thought he, as a person, played a more active role in getting all this started because, you know, I thought it was going to be him. And it wasn't at all. It was basically all her.
Right, yeah.
And I thought it was him that was going to be the active participant in a lot of this.
Right.
And essentially, he was just along for the ride. I mean, he wanted to do the right thing.
Right.
But he only cared about her. He only cared about how he felt about her.
Right.
He didn't care about this bigger picture. He just did. Right. You know what? That's not even fair to say he didn't care. His mind, he couldn't comprehend it.
Right.
He couldn't comprehend, like, I love her. Why is this a thing?
Right. Like, when they go to see Bernie Cohen for the first time, he says to him, why can't you just go talk to the judge? Yeah. Why can't you just talk to the judge?
And because clearly how he grew up black friends.
Right.
He grew up with all these people.
Right.
And so he just couldn't comprehend. Yeah. The judge, he's just like, I don't understand why. Just say it's not right. I don't understand why is this a thing?
Right.
And
he didn't want all the publicity. He didn't want all the publicity and all that stuff. She didn't like it either, but she saw, I guess, as more like a necessary evil to get their justice, basically, because the law is fucking horseshit. As you pointed out at the end, though, they do talk about, they have the typical biopic stuff at the end where they have like the words, you know, the text on the screen telling you what happens after the movie, basically. Yeah. And when they were saying, like, they were like, oh, marriage is inherent right. Dirty A turns to me and goes, unless you're two dudes or two chicks.
Right.
And I was like, yes.
They didn't write that one in there.
No, they didn't. It's a really great movie. It's a very touching movie.
Not that it mattered. This plot point didn't matter, but, you know, they never did address who was leaking, like, telling the police who they were.
That's true.
We assumed that it was going to be his mom. It was kind of like maybe a little twist or something like that.
But they never said for sure.
And it was fine because that wasn't the point of the movie.
Right.
But yeah, they never really addressed that.
Right. And that's the other thing. That's the thing that I don't think it was her because.
No.
Yeah.
By the end, I did not either.
Right.
But towards the middle, I kept
thinking. Because she did love her. She loved Mildred, but at the same time, she was like,
she was stuck in a world of where the laws were the laws, and that's how she grew up. And so she just didn't think they should have been married because look at the problems it's caused.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. For the you know, it's set in the 50s, and just how integrated it was, you know, how he was just friends with all these African American people, and it was just like no big thing. It's just like, and like his best friend was like her brother, and so, you know, and it's like, you know, so like it was really nice. It was nice to see that in a movie like this. And it's just, I mean, the cop, I forget who plays the cop.
He's got a recognizable face.
Martin Sokas played Sheriff Brooks. What was he in? He was in something else. Because I've recognized him before. I mean, it's a role that we would have expected in a Jeff Nichols movie. We would have expected Michael Shannon to play that role, probably. Yeah. He was in, he was in Lord of the Rings. He was Celeborn in Lord of the Rings. And he was also in The Equalizer, too. That's probably where I remember him from.
I like the movie a lot. I didn't love the movie. It'll be interesting to see where it falls on my list. I'm not sure it'll make my top 10. I'm not sure it won't right now.
Right.
I didn't love it as much as I thought. I didn't get as emotionally involved as I thought I might have going into the movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, but it was still a good movie.
And I think part of that is also because their life was, it was difficult for them,
there was no one crux, big issue where people were trying to kill them or
right. It was more harassment.
They moved, which is not a good
thing. We're not
saying it was easy on them either, but it's like they moved away for so long from the problem.
Right.
That didn't follow them.
Right.
That we didn't get to see. It was more, the issue was more of an intangible thing where they couldn't be where they wanted to be.
Right.
As opposed to someone every day.
Which is important.
Beating on them. Okay, I mean, which absolutely. Is
important. But at the same time, it's hard to kind of get that across.
It's hard to encompass that emotion in a movie.
Right. It's hard to encompass that in a movie, but it's also hard when they literally, if they were in Virginia and they moved to DC, they were literally like 2 hours away from where they were, 3 hours away. So it's not like they were like in another country or something. It probably felt like they were in another country.
And I think that's the idea. To them, it was as foreign as anything.
Yeah, that's true. But it's still really, really good. The performances are great. Ruth Negga plays Mildred. We haven't even said who played the main characters. She's fantastic in this. And Joel Edgerton plays Richard. And he was also in Midnight Special. So he might be possibly becoming another regular of Jeff Nichols. And just a great cast. And it was a really small story, intimate story that became a much larger story because of the going to the Supreme Court.
And the whole Supreme Court thing, literally plays out in like 10 minutes towards the end. That's the other thing that surprised me. I thought it was going to be more of a back deal. And forth of in the courts and stuff, and it wasn't at all. Which was fine. Not a fault, just not as expected.
Yeah, he focused more on them, on the two of them, and how it affected them. But it was good. I liked it.
Tell the judge I love my wife.
You tell the judge I love my wife.
I mean, that the scene that got me, of course, was that the one emotional scene where he had with her at the end, where he's just like, I can take care of you. Basically, in his mind, he still couldn't comprehend, because to him, that's what it was all about.
Right.
Do they not think I'm good enough to take care of you?
Right. Right. Because his one friend basically said, all you got to do is divorce her. Right. You know, it's like.
Right. And he's sitting there saying, I love you. I want to take care of you. Why?
Right.
Why are they trying to prevent me from doing this? And I think in his mind, he thought it was some personal fault that he might have had.
Right.
And it was a very touching thing. And then at the end, that was her little, what they say that she says at the end was sad.
Yeah.
The whole,
yeah.
I miss him a lot. He took care of me.
Right.
Which is essentially her way of saying I loved him. He loved me.
Right.
That's how they saw it. They took care of each other. So.
Yeah. So if you can find it in your area, definitely check out Loving. It's worth your time. Definitely check out Hacksaw Ridge.
Yes.
Hacksaw Ridge is one of the best movies of the year. Easily.
Yeah, easily.
And if you're in the mood for a little magic, go see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, if you haven't already seen it.
Or Doctor Strange, magic too.
I like Fantastic Beasts better. I really did.
I'm sorry.
Fuck you. God, you're an asshole. That'll do it for this episode. We're about to record the next one. But on the next episode, we'll be discussing Moana from Disney. Rules Don't Apply from Warren Beatty, director, writer,
director. But maybe they should.
We're also going to discuss, we're going to have an early review for The Space Between Us. We may also, if we can squeeze it in there, we may also finally have a discussion on Neon Demon. Or however the music goes, because it's a really good soundtrack. And, we'll see you next time, folks. Thanks for listening.